Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, drama. Later on, we hear The Lost Weekend, an Oscar-winning motion picture on radio with Ray Milland. Right now, it's the Academy Award Theater with John Garfield reprising his role as Albert Schmidt from the 1945 movie Pride of the Marines. This first heard on June 15, 1946 on CBS.
The House of Squibb, manufacturing chemist to the medical profession since 1858, brings you Academy Award. The pictures, the players, the techniques and skills which have won or been nominated for, the coveted awards granted each year by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to each in his field for outstanding achievement. The House of Squibb, makers of the great family of Squibb medicinal products, today brings you John Garfield in Pride of the Marines with Rosemary DeCamp.
This is the story of an heroic Marine. In its way, it's the story of other heroic American fighting men, too, whose qualities in battle, whose qualities in the even grimmer struggle for rehabilitation, made these American soldiers the pride of the free world. This is the story of a boy who's the pride of the Marines, Al Schmidt, United States Marine Corps. The story of Al Schmidt begins on an island where the scourge of the Japanese advance was first checked, Guadalcanal.
They're coming again, Schmidt. Keep down, they'll be coming any minute now. They won't come from where they're shooting. I think they're going to cross the river.
Okay, Diamond, how about cutting this gun in?
Wait. Now, fire! Those hand grenades, let him have it. Oh! They got Johnny! They got Johnny!
Oh, you yellow-bellied, dirty, stinking, slimy pigs! The best guy in the world!
Watch it! Coming in again!
Diamond!
Push me out of your way!
Where you hit? Where
shoulder!
Hit?
Get me out of your way! I'll stick with it, stick! Don't let him through!
Lee! Don't kick off! I'll get help soon! I don't want to be alone, Lee! Dirty skibbies. Try and sneak one up on me, huh? You ain't coming so fast anymore. Don't like what you're getting, do you? Come on, suckers. There's nobody in your way. Just a couple of Marines. Oh! I can't see. Right in the face. My eyes. I can't see. I can't see, Lee. I can't see.
Al, don't do it. We'll get help soon. Put down that 45. Don't shoot yourself.
Shoot myself? Just tell me where they are, Lee. Tell me where they're coming from, Lee. Tell me where they are.
Back home, a Marine sweetheart gets a letter from a sailor aboard a hospital ship. A girl back in Philadelphia hears about Al Schmidt.
Dear Ruth, Al asked me to write this letter on account of he can't do any writing now. I am a sailor and am taking care of his legs. An infection. But that's clearing up. I will tell you honestly and truly, though, that he is a hero. And I do mean hero. Al says he will be coming home one of these days and hopes to see you real soon. Lots of love, Al Schmidt. You see, folks, he says Al's all right. Then why couldn't Al write himself?
And as for the Red Cross workers here in San Diego Base Hospital, well, they're okay. Even the blonde one who brings me a letter. But as for me, I'll take a girl named Ruth every time.
Ah, come on, pal. This is the first letter you've written yourself. Give a little. Big. Think how she wants to come to you.
Well, what'll I say?
Oh, you want to tell her about your gang?
Oh, sure, yeah. We got a great gang of gyrenes here, Ruthie. A lot of them from the canal. Lee Diamond, who was with me, Kababian. Where's that ashtray, Blondie?
On the desk, right by your hand. Your right hand, Al.
Oh, thanks.
Well, how about the rest of the letter?
Oh, that's enough.
Isn't there anything else you want to tell her, Al?
Like what?
About your eyes.
No.
Well, she'll have to know sometime.
Look, after I have my operation, after I can see again. Well, then I'll tell her. Then it'll be a big laugh for the both of us, understand?
You know there's an operation scheduled for you tomorrow morning.
Well, sure, they told me. Bet you thought I'd be scared or something. Well, this is what I've been waiting for. This is going to fix me up.
Al, the doctor doesn't promise you'll be able to see after this operation. Maybe you'll...
He doesn't have to promise. I know them doctors. Like the one on the ship who was always saying I might lose a leg from blood poisoning. Didn't, did I? Here, add something to that letter, will you, Ruthie? Here, to Ruthie. Ruthie, I've been holding out the best news to the end. You keep asking me why I don't write to you myself. Well, the reason is my hands. I caught some shrapnel in them like a dumb bunny. But any day now, you'll be getting a letter every day written by yours truly himself.
Al, this isn't any good. You're just storing up trouble for yourself, for both of you.
Don't be a killjoy, Blondie. Here I am on top of the world. And take this from me, will you? It won't be long before I come walking up the steps of your house, Ruthie. And don't you worry about my hands, baby. When I get them on you, you'll know they're all right. Gosh, sweetheart, I can hardly wait to see you.
Say it, Al. Just make believe I'm a typewriter. Don't be embarrassed.
I can hardly wait to kiss you for the first time, honey. I never told you what I feel like when you're in my arms. Looking up at me with your eyes like, with that kind of funny, wonderful light in your eyes, like you did on that railroad platform when I went away.
Say it, Al.
Lots of love, your brown-eyed devil. She used to call me that once. It's a kind of joke between us, see?
Yeah.
Blondie, look at this picture. Ain't that a nice face, though, ain't it? Here, come here, take a look.
No, Smitty, I just looked at it a little bit ago.
Oh, don't rip me. I only showed it to you once.
Yeah, it's a very nice face, Al. A guy could lean on a girl like that.
A Marine don't lean on anybody. If there's any leaning to be done, the female sex the weaker, ain't it?
Well, most people lean a little on somebody. Nobody stands alone.
Well, you just let me have that operation, Blondie. I'll stand alone. You just watch me.
Thanks, nurse. Well, I guess we're ready for you now, Smitty.
Not too soon for me, Doc. I'm busting at the seams. It's been the longest 3 weeks of my life.
Now, look, Smitty, don't expect to see the minute the bandage is off, huh? I've darkened the room so as not
okay.
to...
Okay. You told me that, Doc. Just get it off, will you?
Now, I'm not making any promises either. The healing process
is... Okay, but let's try it. Please.
Bandage is off now.
No! Not a darn thing. But I didn't expect to see with the blinds down. You said it was dark in here. How about the flashlight? You promised...
I will. But now take it easy.
Turn it on, Doc. Even if it's only a 2-bit flashlight. I'm going to see stars and angels and Ruth. Come on, Doc. Let me see the light. Bring it closer.
See anything?
Yeah. Like a locomotive headlight way off in the fog. Bring it closer. Closer, Doc.
I'm sorry, Al. The light was full on your face. Close.
Doc, I can't be blind. Not for my whole life.
Look, Al, I...
Doc, please. All you medicine fellas, well, you're smart, you're educated, you got ways of fixing guys up. I did my best, I fought. I'm not asking for so much.
Al, this examination isn't final. I told you yesterday it wouldn't be.
Oh, when can we try again? Tomorrow, next week?
Well, you're still suffering from the effects of eye concussion. There are still pieces of shrapnel that have to work themselves out. And you'll probably have to have another operation after a while.
When?
Well, we'll have to wait. 6 months, a year. Even then, there's no assurance you'll see.
6 months? What are my chances? Give it to me straight.
I have a book here I want you to take with you. And we have people right here who'll teach you to...
No! It's one of them books for the blind. I don't want any of that stuff. I want to stand on my own. I don't want any of that stuff.
Al, right now I'm thinking of someone. A doctor friend of mine. We went to school together. He was blind from the time he was 10 years old. That didn't stop him. He's married, got 2 kids. He's a fine psychiatrist and a happy man. Are you listening to me, Al? I'm not saying it'll be easy for you. Not that these first months aren't the toughest. But people get the wrong idea about blindness. A blind man is not helpless. He just has to do things in a little different way from the rest of us. Are you listening to me, Al?
Why don't God strike me dead?
Nurse, come here. I want to get this over with quick.
Listen, Al.
You got your pencil?
Yes.
Dear Ruth.
What harm will it do to think it over for another week?
What good will it do? I made up my mind last night.
Your mind's made up? Well, how about giving Ruth a chance to decide for herself?
To decide what? How to ruin her life? Look, she's worked hard all her life. Me, the big shot. I was going to give her all the things she never had. She wasn't going to have to work anymore. What can I give her now?
But, Al,
I won't have her being a seeing-eye dog for me.
Oh, how do you know she'll feel that way about it? At least tell her the truth, Al. Find out what she wants. She's not going to stop loving you, writing to you.
Then send her letters back. Suppose I do give her a few bad days. She's pretty. She'll meet another guy. She'll fall in love. You going to write the letter for me? Or do I have to ask Lee Diamond?
I'll write it. Go ahead.
Dear Ruth, I guess this letter's going to be a kind of surprise, but I might as well give it to you straight. I'm not coming back to Philly. Not now, not ever. And as for getting married, I've decided, well, it just ain't up my alley.
I hope you'll be happy, and I hope you get yourself another boyfriend real soon. Yours, Al Schmidt.
Al, here you are. There's a long-distance call for you, Al. Here, I'll take you.
Oh, from where?
It's from Ruth, from Philadelphia.
I ain't here.
She must have received your letter. Why don't you...
Don't you understand? I can't talk to her. Tell her to leave me alone.
All right, Al. Hello. May I accept the call, please? This is Virginia Pfeiffer of the Red Cross.
Just a minute, please. Hello? A friend of Private Schmidt's asks if she can accept the call. Miss Virginia Pfeiffer of the Red Cross.
Oh, yes. She's been writing.
Go ahead, San Diego.
Is this Ruth?
Yes, Miss Pfeiffer. I got Al's last letter.
He's not breaking off with you because he doesn't love you, Ruth. Believe me, he does.
Well, then why?
Get set for a very bad shock, Ruth.
What is it?
Al has completely lost the sight of one eye and may never regain sight in the other. That's why he broke with you. He's afraid of becoming a burden. Do you understand now? Hello? Ruth?
Yes.
There's one thing I'd better find out, Ruth, and you can think it over if you want to. It'll make a difference in helping Al. Do you still love him? Do you want him? I mean, as a husband.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Remember, he may be totally blind for the rest of his life.
Well, what does that matter?
You don't want to think it over?
Think what over? I didn't fall in love with his eyes, not the color of his hair. I fell in love with him, with a man, with Al. That hasn't changed because... because something has happened to his eye.
Captain Burroughs says to go in, Smitty.
Oh, good morning, Schmidt. Morning, Miss Pfeiffer.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Hi, Al.
Oh, sounds like Lee.
That's it.
Sit down, everybody. Schmidt, I've got great news for you. You're getting the Navy Cross. Congratulations.
Al, it's wonderful.
Say, that is something.
Corporal Diamond's getting one, too, although the ceremonies won't be held at the same place.
That's great, Lee.
Give me a wallop.
The Navy has decided that you'll get your award at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. Corporal Diamond's going to go in on furlough, too, and he'll be on the train with you. And you'll leave tomorrow and be home in time for Christmas.
I gotta go back there?
Sorry, Schmidt. You're under orders. You're going back.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Goodbye. And good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Where are we, Lee?
Still crossing Ohio, I guess, Al.
Lee, I've been thinking it over. I don't want to see Ruth. We're finished. There's no point in having her wake over the corpse. I don't want to see her at all, see? You send a telegram for me. Tell Ruth not to come to the station.
Look, Smitty, that's not fair. She probably planned a Christmas celebration. You're going to see her.
Lee, you send that wire.
Okay. I'll send it. First, I got something on my chest. Al, back there in the canal, I thought something about you. I never told you. It was after you got that grenade in your face. Toward morning it was, when we thought them Japs were coming in on us. You remember what you did, Al? You pulled your .45, and I thought you meant to kill yourself. You kept yelling, "Tell me when they come in, Lee. I can't see, but you tell me where they are, and I'll shoot them." Al, I was scared to death then, laying on the ground, waiting for a Jap bayonet. But I couldn't help thinking something. I thought that kid Smitty has more guts than any man alive. But I was wrong, Al. I think you're only hopped up by excitement like you're taking a shot or something. I don't think you got guts, Al. I think you're kind of yellow. You haven't got the guts to see Ruth.
Shut up. Shut up. You're a stinking liar. You're talking because you know I can't crack you in your lying face.
Okay, okay. Just ask yourself a question. Would you do it over again if you knew you were going to be blind, Al? Would you join up? Would you ask for combat instead of shore duty? Would you do it over again? Al, listen to me. Sure, you're in a tough spot, but it's not peaches and cream for everybody else.
What problems have you got? You're in one piece, ain't you? Your wife don't have to turn over on her insides when she sees you. When you go for a job, there ain't nobody gonna say, "We got no use for ex-heroes like you."
That's what you think. Sure, there'll be some guys who won't hire you, even when they know you can handle a job, but... Al, there's some who won't hire me because my name is Diamond instead of Jones. Because I celebrate Passover instead of Easter. Al, don't you see what I'm talking about? You and me, we need the same kind of a world. We need a country to live in where nobody gets booted around for any reason.
I'm all mixed up. Mixed up and scared. Dragging at the heels in yellow.
Oh, no, Al, no. I wasn't telling the truth before. You're not yellow. You're a swell guy, a wonderful guy. You're a pure sort of guy, if ever I saw. But, Al, don't leave all your guts behind on Guadalcanal.
Okay, Lee. But now we send that wire.
Al, didn't what I say mean anything to you?
Yeah. But I'll still send that wire.
You're Ruth. I know you from Al's snapshot. I'm Lee Diamond. Didn't you get his telegram?
Yes, I did. But I decided to come down to the station anyway. Oh, Lee, help me. I've got to get him back where he lived, amongst his friends. He's got to know.
He's pretty set on not going.
Where are you taking him now?
The Navy hospital.
He's got to come home first, even for just an hour.
Well, if you won't go with him, he won't.
I have Al's car here. Couldn't you tell him it's a Navy car, maybe? I'll take him to the house, and then tonight I'll drive him to the hospital.
Oh, I don't know, Ruth. I
want one chance, Lee. Won't you give it to me, please? It's his whole life I'm fighting for.
Yeah, and yours, I know. Okay, I'll see how good a liar I am, Ruth. Hang on.
Boy, sounds like Philly, all right. Good old Philly. Say, Lieutenant, where are we? I can't see so good yet. Can't you hear me, Lieutenant?
I have orders against talking while driving.
Okay. You don't mind if I talk to you, though, do you? I'm kind of hopped up about coming home. I got to talk to somebody.
Okay.
I guess that must be your perfume I'm smelling now. It's nice. If you don't mind my saying so, it's the first time a lieutenant smelled nice to me. Kind of reminds me of a perfume I once gave to... Say, you know, I'm bugs. Everything reminds me of something today. Well, you take this car. I know there was something bothering me about it. You hear that little motor knock when you give it a gas? I had a jalopy once that did exactly the same thing. I got a little eye trouble. That's why I come here. To get it fixed up. Say, are we here at the hospital?
Yes.
Would you take this out for me, Lieutenant? It's not heavy.
Yes. This way.
Thanks. I'll take the bag now. You just lead the way.
Some steps now.
Wooden steps. Say, this hospital must be an old dump.
That's all.
Was something holding us up, Lieutenant?
Al.
Ruth! I thought there was something familiar.
Al, I had to do this.
What's the use? It's no good.
Al, it's Christmas Eve. Come on, Al. You've got to come in. You're home. Going.
Stop following me around. I'm blind, Ruth. I'm helpless. I'd be a drag on you all your life.
Why don't you let me decide that?
Because I'm nobody's lapdog, that's why. I got too much pride.
You don't have any pride. You want to feel sorry for yourself. You want to feel lonely. You haven't got the pride to accept being blind like a man.
I'm going right now. You get in that car and drive
it. I won't do it. You're going to stay right here and you're going to listen to me. I won't drive you.
That's fine. That ties it all up. I could beat your ears off for saying that. But there's one card you missed. I may be blind, but I know where the phone is in this house. I'm calling a cab.
You wait a minute here. Oh, Al, don't you understand? If you go out of this room now, you'll leave me to stumble all through my life. What is there to pity about a brave man? Suppose there never was a war, darling. What if we were married and one day I got hit by an automobile and was left a cripple? Would you walk out on me? You know you wouldn't. Oh, darling, my heart has been falling over things all year because you've been gone. I need you, Al. Sure, you'll need me, too, but what's wrong with that? Why shouldn't two people need each other? I don't know what I'll do if you leave me. I need you too much, Al.
Lucy, don't. I don't want to make you cry.
I need you, Al.
I don't want to make you cry. It's just a... Well, I was only an ordinary guy before, and I wasn't worth you then, and now I'm less than an ordinary guy. I can't see.
Less than ordinary? You? Oh, sweetheart, don't you realize that every single man who's fought is no longer ordinary? Don't you realize that millions and millions of people were looking to Guadalcanal every day while you were fighting there? They were. Millions of them. Every civilized person in the world, I guess. And it wasn't any ordinary guy who kept the Japs back that night. It was one of the most extraordinary guys in the world. You, Al Schmidt. Marine. Al. Al, where are you going?
I guess I'd better unpack that kit, Ruthie.
Oh, Al.
Well, looks like I'm home for keeps, baby.
Next week, another great picture. The House of Squibb will present Academy Award starring Pat O'Brien and Adolph Monju in Front Page. Pride of the Marines was written for radio by Frank Wilson with an original musical score composed and conducted by Lee Stevens. Our producer-director is Dee Engelbach. John Garfield, whose performance you enjoyed today as Al Schmidt, is soon to be seen in Warner Brothers' new production, Humoresque. Rosemary DeCamp, who played Virginia, may currently be seen in Warner Brothers' production, Two Guys from Milwaukee. This is Hugh Brundage bidding you good night until next week at the same time when you're invited to listen again to Academy Award presented by the House of Squibb, a name you can trust. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Academy Award Theater on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from June 15th, 1946. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. And now the Oscar-winning motion picture, The Lost Weekend, adapted on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players. The film, released in 1945, picked up four Oscars that year for Best Writing, Best Director for Billy Wilder, Best Actor in a Leading Role for Ray Milland, who we'll hear next. Also, it received the Best Picture Award. It also marked the first time a theremin, the electronic musical instrument, was heard in a major motion picture soundtrack, and we'll hear that in elements of the score next. First heard on CBS on January 7th, 1946.
Good evening. Lady Esther welcomes you to join the Screen Guild Players in another brilliant Hollywood event. Red Book Magazine's annual award to the Outstanding Picture of 1945. Barry Fitzgerald is here in person to make the awards. But first, the play. Lady Esther presents the Red Book selection for 1945. The Paramount picture, The Lost Weekend, starring Ray Milland, Jane Wyman, and Frank Phelan. New York, Third Avenue. A warm October afternoon. Nat's Bar. A little place is almost empty. Almost, not quite.
And how is my very good friend Nat today?
Yes, Mr. Boynum.
This being an especially fine afternoon, and I having just acquired two lovely bottles, which you will perceive in this paper bag at my elbow, I have decided to ask for your hand in marriage.
Look, Mr. Boynum.
If that is to be your attitude, Nat, I shall have to drown my sorrows in a jigger of rye. Just one, that's all.
Sorry, Mr. Boynum. No credit.
Today, Nat, you'll be glad to know we can barter on a cash basis. You see? Legal tender.
One straight ride.
That was the idea.
Okay, it's your funeral. First one always tastes rotten, don't it? Or maybe you never like the taste.
Again.
Say, how about your brother? You told me you and him was going away for the weekend.
We were, and in fact we are, on the 6:45. Unfortunately, most unfortunately, my brother Wick was called away by a business matter. I just happened to remember a telephone call.
Pretty sharp. And then you duck right out and spend your train fare for liquor, huh? Taking them two bottles with you?
Oh, I may never touch them while I'm there. Not a drop. What you don't understand, all of you, is that I've got to know what's around. That I can have it if I need it, that's all.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys like that. Take a bottle and put it on the shelf. All they want is just to look at it. Won't even have a corkscrew, just to be sure. Only all of a sudden, they grab the bottle and bite off the neck.
Nat, one more reproving word, and I shall consult our lawyer about a divorce.
Let me wipe up the bar. That glass left a circle.
No. Don't wipe it away, Nat. Let me have my little vicious circle. You know, the circle is the perfect geometric figure. No end, no beginning. Weave me another, Nat. Oh, come on, Nat. One little jigger of dreams.
Nope.
You don't approve of drinking?
Not the way you drink.
You're worried about me, huh? Well, don't be, Nat. Just think what it does to my mind. It tosses the sandbags overboard so the balloon can soar. Suddenly, I'm competent, supremely competent. I'm one of the great ones. I'm Michelangelo molding the beard of Moses. I'm Van Gogh painting pure sunlight. I'm Barrymore before the movies got him by the throat. I'm a hold-up man. I'm Jesse James's brothers. I'm all three of them. I'm W. Shakespeare. And out there, it's not Third Avenue any longer. It's the Nile, Nat. The Nile. And down it moves the barge of Cleopatra. Listen. Purple the sails, and so perfumed that the winds were lovesick with them. The oars were silver, which to the tune of lutes kept stroke, and made the water which they beat follow.
Keep it up, Don. More lines and more. And more little circles on the bar. 3, 5, 8, 9. Till suddenly you realize it's late. Now grab your bottles and hurry home, but don't go in yet, Don. Look up there first. Look up. All your windows dark. Quick must have gone. Sure, he'd be mad enough to go away alone. But Helen, Helen may be around. Watch out, she doesn't see us sneaking in. All right, you're in. Now lock the door. Slip the catch. So far, so good. No, no, wait a minute. Those bottles, you've got to hide one down. That's it, that's fine. In the ceiling light, in the metal bowl. Now set the other bottle by the chair and pull out the cork. And fill the glass. Nothing to stop you anymore, Don. Go on and drink. Drink. No one can see you. It's grown quite dark. Quite dark. Soon, soon there won't be any light at all.
Mr. Burnham, I thought you was going away.
I'll have the usual.
Look, Mr. Burnham, this is still morning.
Pour it, Nat.
Okay.
It's when you need it most in the morning.
Haven't you learned that yet? At night it's a drink, in the morning it's medicine. I'll have another jigger of tonic.
How about those 2 quarts? Did you polish off both them bottles last night?
Both?
Hey, that's right. I did have 2 bottles, didn't I? I hid one of them. I've still got it. I'm a capitalist, Nat. I got untapped reserves. I'm rich.
Mr. Burnham, if you had enough money, you'd kill yourself in a month. Don't make no difference for me, but it sure is tough on that girl.
What girl?
The one in the leopard coat. She was in again last night, looking for you. That's an awful high-class young lady.
You bet she is.
How the heck she ever get mixed up with a guy that sops it up like you do?
That's a problem, isn't it? That nice young man who drinks and the high-class young lady, and why does he drink and why doesn't he stop? That's my novel, Nat. Morbid stuff. Nothing but the book of the month club, a horror story, the confessions of a booze addict, the log book of an alcoholic. Oh, come on, that breakdown. I'm empty again. You know what I'm going to call my novel? The Bottle. That's all. Very simple. The Bottle. Got it all in my mind. Let me tell you the first chapter. The man with the bottle meets a girl. Extra special girl. He meets her, makes a date, goes on the wagon for 6 weeks.
He's in love, huh?
That's what's going to be so hard to write. Love's the hardest thing in the world to write about. So simple. You've got to catch it through details. The early morning sunlight hitting the ash cans in front of our house. A ringing telephone that sounds like Beethoven's Pastorale. A letter scribbled on our office stationery that smells like all the lilacs in Ohio.
And no drinking?
He thinks he's cured. If he can find a job now, they can be married and that's that. But it isn't that. Not quite, because... Fill me up, Nat. I'll tell you why. You see, it's a few months later now, and she's written her folks all about the fella. And they've come all the way from Ohio to meet him. He's supposed to be at their hotel at noon. But suddenly he's scared. He knows he can't face him. Not like that, not cold. He needs a drink, just one. And so he takes just one. And then another, and then another. And then all of a sudden it's 5 o'clock and he's still there at home with his bottle.
He's drunk.
He's blind. And when the girl comes up to find out what's happened, that's how she finds him.
Don, I understand. Of course I do. You were a little nervous about meeting my folks, so you took a few drinks. What of it? Most people drink a little.
Sure. The lucky ones who can take it or leave it. But then there are the ones who can't take it and can't leave it either. Helen, what I'm trying to say is I'm not a
drinker. I'm a drunk.
Darling, we can go over this tomorrow. Right now.
You've heard the facts. That's all there is to it.
I've heard them, and they're not very pleasant. But they could be worse. After all, you're not an embezzler or a murderer. You can be cured.
That has a familiar ring to it.
There must be some reason why you drink. The right doctor can...
I'm way ahead of the right doctor. I know the reason. The reason is me, what I am. Or rather, what I'm not.
What aren't you that you want to be, Don?
A writer. Silly, isn't it? Because I could be. I was. Until that guy started looking over my shoulder and whispering in a thin, clear voice like the E string on a violin. Don Burnham, he'd whisper. It's not good enough. How about a couple of drinks just to put it on its feet, huh? So I had a couple. That made all the difference. Suddenly, I could see the whole thing, the tragic sweep of the great novel, beautifully proportioned. But before I could grab it and throw it out on paper, the drink would wear off and everything would be gone. And there was despair. And a drink that counterbalanced despair. One that counterbalanced the counterbalance, and that guy would be always at my shoulder.
What guy? Who are you talking about?
The other Don Burnham. There are two of us, you know. Don the writer and Don the drunk. I tried to break away from the other one a lot of ways. Once I even hocked my typewriter and bought a gun. Yeah, still got the bullet.
Don.
I meant to do it on my 30th birthday, but that other Don wanted us to have a drink first. He always does. The gun went for 3 quarts of whiskey. The flop suicide of a flop writer.
But you are a writer. You have every quality for it. Wit, imagination, pity.
Oh, come on. Let's face reality. I'm 33. I've never done anything. I'm not doing anything. I never will do anything. 0, 0, 0.
But you will. We'll straighten all this out.
Helen, for your own good, you'd better go.
Sit down. I'm going to make some coffee.
Go on. Clear out. Clear out while you can.
Because I've got a rival? Because you think you're in love with a bottle? You don't know me, Don. I'm going to fight and fight and fight. And don't try and argue. Bend down and be kissed.
That was 3 years ago, Nat. That's a long time to keep fighting, to keep believing. A sanatorium, a health farm, a psychiatrist, nothing worked. And still she holds on. She knows she's clutching a razor, but she won't let go. 3 years of it.
Yeah, and how does it come out?
I don't know. I haven't figured that far.
Want me to tell you? Well, one day your guy gets wise to himself and gets back that gun. Or if he's only got $1.10, he goes up to the top of the Empire State Building, way up on top, and then... Or he can do it for a nickel in the subway under a train like that.
But what if Helen's right after all? He sits down and turns out something good, but good, and that pulls him up and snaps him out of it.
This guy? Not from where I sit.
Oh, you're wrong, Nat. I'm going to do it. That's why I didn't go on that weekend. See, this time I've got it, Nat. I'm going home. I'm going to write.
Burnham apartment, the living room, the portable typewriter on the desk, 2 shaking hands slip a sheet of paper in the machine, and slowly, grimly, begin to type.
The Bottle, a novel by Don Burnham. For Helen, with all my love. With all my love.
That first little sentence. Agony, isn't it? Huh? Maybe a cigarette would help. Right there on the table by the... Oh, sorry. I didn't notice that bottle down. That was from last night. Last night, that was great, wasn't it? You know, Mimi, that's just what you really need, a drink. Just one. Just one drink to get you started. No, 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 not that bottle. That's empty, remember? You want the other one, the one you hid. That's right. It might be in the closet, Don. It's worth a look. Shelf, the place you always used to. No, it must be in the living room. The bookcase. Don, back of those books. But it's got to be here. It's got to be somewhere. You had another bottle. You know you did. Where'd you put it? You're not crazy. Where'd you put that other bottle? Hold it. Look up. Right over your head. The light fixture, Don. That's where you... Wait a minute. The door. Sure, you gotta lock the front door first. That's the safety catch on. That's it. Now, no one can get in. No one, Don.
Stop it, Helen.
Stop it, stop it. I'm all right. I just can't stalk. Stop it!
Sure, Don. Sure, you're all right. All you need is a drink. One drink this morning, you'll be fine all day. Tough luck, though. Bottle's empty. Any money? Not a dime. Nat got it yesterday. No credit either. No nothing. Unless you want to use that portable. Why not? Why don't you, Don? Why don't you give it to Nat? Why don't you get some good out of it? Now you're talking. Rip the paper out, slap on the lid, and let's get going. Sure, I know you're weak and the thing's heavy. But it's only to Nat's. Just a block and a half. Come on, start walking. You need the drink, boy.
Nat. Nat.
Mr. Boynum, what's the matter?
Let me have one, Nat. I'm dying. Just one, please.
I thought you were home writing that book.
Oh, you tricked me. The same old dirty trick. Give me one, Nat. I'll pay you when I can. I just don't let me die here.
No credit, and you know it.
All right, so it's charity. I'm begging for you one, Nat. Just give me one.
Yeah, one. One's too many, and 100's not enough. Here.
Nat.
That's all.
Oh, please, please. I'll pay you. I'll let you have my typewriter.
I'm no writer. You're the writer. Now go on home. Go home. And you better take something to quiet yourself. You're heading straight for the DT.
I'm not.
That's what they all say until they start seeing the little animals.
Oh, shut up!
You know that stuff about pink elephants? That's the bunk. It's the little animals. Little tiny turkeys in straw hats. Midget monkeys coming through the keyholes. With one guy I know, it used to be beetles.
Oh, no.
Beetles crawling all over them in the dark. That's when it comes, you know, in the dark.
No, stop it! Stop it! Nat, please, please, just one. I'll die if you don't.
You'll die if I do. Here, $5. But drink it up somewhere else. I don't want that kind of money here.
Downstairs phoned me. She promised she'd let me know when you came home. She heard you scream.
Go away. Go away.
Oh, Silly, I came to help you. Come on, now get up. Put your hand on my shoulder. No, wait, we need some light.
No, hell no.
What's wrong, Don?
The wall, don't look.
What wall?
There, over there, the mouse and the bat, that hole in the wall.
There isn't any hole in the wall, look.
But I saw it, I saw it.
Oh, you had some kind of nightmare. Stop shaking, John. Everything will be all right. I'll stay right with you. You'll get some food and sleep.
Little animals. It's always the little animals. That's what he said.
Well, you're not making much sense.
What he said about the ending. Like this. Or like that. Like this. Or like that.
Darling, what you need is a good night's sleep.
Don, you awake yet? Come on, lazy bones, it's time to get up. I've got toast and coffee and scrambled eggs and... Don? Don, did you hear me? Don!
Don, why don't you... Gone. He's not here, he's gone.
Yeah? Oh, good morning, miss.
Excuse me. Did someone come in here this morning to pawn a... Yes, there it is on the rack. That leopard coat.
Huh?
I want it back. It's mine.
It's your coat?
It's all right. He had my permission. How much did you give him?
He didn't want any money. He wanted to swap it.
For what?
Something he hocked here a long time back.
What?
Gun.
Don.
Helen, how the devil did you get in?
I got the pass key from the janitor. The safety latch wasn't on.
What's the matter? Why are you looking about this way?
No reason. I just wanted to be sure I left everything right.
Well, I'd like to finish up a few things before Wick gets back. You'd better run along. And thank you.
Don, there was some whiskey left when I cleaned up last night.
Was there?
Would you like to know where I put the bottle?
No.
Don't you want a drink, Don?
No.
It's right here in the umbrella stand. Why don't you, Don?
I don't feel like a drink. Not now, I told you.
Just one. Here's a glass, please.
Say, what are you up to?
Drink it. You need it, Don. I want you to drink it. I'll get you some more. I'll get you all you want.
What kind of talk is that?
Oh, I will. I mean it. I'd rather have you drunk than dead.
Dead? Who wants to be dead?
Don't lie to me. You have a gun and bullets. If those bullets aren't in this drawer...
All right, they're not there. So what? This business is just a formality. Don Burnham is dead already. He died over this weekend.
That's not true.
It is. He died of moral anemia, of fear, of shame, of DTs.
That Don Burnham. And now you want to kill the other one?
What other one?
There were two Dons. You told me so yourself. Don Burnham the drunk and Don Burnham the rider. It's just the drunk who died, so the rider's free. No one to whisper anymore. No one to interfere.
Oh, stop trying to stall me. It's too late, Helen. What do you expect, a miracle?
Yes, 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 if I could only make you wait.
Who is it?
It's me, Mr. Burnham. I got something for you.
Come in, Nat. What is it?
The other night at my place, you forgot your typewriter. Thought I'd bring it up.
Thank you, Nat.
Writes real good. I oiled her up a little. I didn't oil her up so you could hock it.
I'll take it, Nat.
Oh, sure. Well, goodbye, Mr. Burnham. And how's all them lilacs in Ohio?
Don, this is it. It happened. I didn't ask for a big miracle.
Helen, you're not serious.
Somebody is. Somebody somewhere sent this typewriter to you. Why? Because he means you to write.
Write what? I tried. Couldn't even find the first line.
Of course you couldn't. You couldn't write the beginning when you didn't know the ending.
The end is a question mark, Helen. Will be as long as I live.
Don't say that, Don.
Give me a Helen. That glass, I'll take it now.
Don. Don, you dropped your cigarette in that...
Yes, Helen. There's a question mark after every story. Love. Will it last? Success. Does it bring happiness? Death. Is it heaven or hell or sleep? All right, this strength of mine, such as it is, will it hold out? We'll try.
On behalf of the Motion Picture Relief Fund, thank you, Ray Milland, Jane Wyman, and Frank Phelan for your deeply moving performances. Which bring us, quite fittingly, to the Red Book Magazine Awards for 1945. As you all know, Red Book Magazine annually awards the Red Book Cup for what it deems the outstanding screen achievement of the year. And it is Lady Esther's annual custom to invite one of the previous year's winning cast to make the presentation on behalf of Red Book. Last year's winner, of course, was Going My Way. And here in person is Barry Fitzgerald.
Thank you very much. Well, I've just this to say. This is a beautiful cup, and Leo McCary, Bing Crosby, and I have valued having it for a year. Now it goes into other hands. And I'm sure that millions of people all over America will agree with Mr. Edwin Barmer, editor of Red Book, and Mr. Thornton Delahanty, its motion picture critic, that the cup is going to the proper people, the men behind The Lost Weekend. Jane, call the boys.
Come on, Charlie. Come on, Billy.
Go ahead, Ray. Introduce them.
Ladies and gentlemen, our two-in-one boss, who between them wrote, produced, and directed the picture.
Mr. Charles Brackett and Mr. Billy Wilder.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is an honor indeed. In accepting it, Mr. Wilder and I want to thank the people who made the picture possible. Charles Jackson for his brilliant novel, the Paramount front office for giving us the green light, you, Ray, and you, Jane, and the whole cast, John Seitz, the cameraman, Doan Harrison, the editor, Miklos Roshar for his magnificent music. Billy, is there anyone I've forgotten?
Ah, yes. A word of thanks to the man who helped us with our research, to Mr. W.C. Fields, for graciously permitting us to peek at the x-rays of his kidneys.
For all of us, thanks to Red Book, thanks to Lady Esther, and good night.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players will present History Is Made at Night. It will star Virginia Bruce and Paul Lucas. Be sure to listen.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Players on Tuned to Yesterday, an adaptation of The Lost Weekend from January 7th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.